thunder sky is black as day. Only a dream away.
Outside my window, so
hey, same.
It's like a somewhere out there when they, instead of them looking up at the same star at the same time, we're both have garbage
listening
trucks.
Listening to garbage truck.
That one's backing up. This guy's doing some serious dumping over here. He's not backing up. It's always a prolonged ordeal. I don't know what it is about the configuration of our dumpster stall or wherever, but it's always like 10 minutes to roll that fucker in and out. Well then, here I am.
How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Oh my God. Feels weird talking to you and not being like, ugh.
Oh, that's why the last man. truck's backing up. I'm doing a 3-point turn there. Yeah, it's, although as I was watching, I mean, I don't know if we're recording right now, but
I'm always recording.
Oh, that's terrifying. As I was watching it, I was like, who's going to like this besides me?
I don't know. I don't, like, it's such a bizarre thing, and we'll get into it, but it's such a bizarre thing.
But like I'm on Twitter, and you know, there's not really judging from anything, but like that George Harrison was a trending topic yesterday, and it was just all these people like praising him for being, you know, his most George Harrison. So it's like, well, people are connecting to it somehow, and like people are reaching out to me and stuff. But like, there were a couple times where I was like, this is too much for me as well.
Hey, Ben, we're talking about Why the Last Man.
I'll come back.
I'll see you guys. You pull the ripcord.
We're doing our rewatch.
It's about time.
It all makes sense when you watch it again.
It does.
It's a bad show from the start.
Yes, it is. I almost want to do like a fan edit. I know we promised that we would never talk about Why the Last Man again, but I really want to see if I can edit that first episode so it sets things up better. But I don't think the footage exists of good quality entertainment.
There's the problem.
Yeah.
Ben, what's going on in your t-shirt today?
Oh, this is a classic pop culture mashup wherein we have Galactus. The famous Marvel character, but it says consume, and he looks like the aliens from They Live.
Okay.
Oh. So very it's good.
Two properties.
Yeah, mine says lost in the cranberry sauce.
Nice.
Now can you guys leave the house with all the pussy you guys drown in with those shirts?
It makes it difficult.
First? Okay.
Well, what's on your shirt? A tree and a sunset.
Some palm trees and a sunset. This is also known as the sleeping shirt. I did not sleep in this, but it was clean and on top of the pile, so I put that in on.
Boo 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 shirt talk.
So how was your Thanksgiving, fellas?
Shirt talk. Good. Yeah, great. although I had already had a Thanksgiving dinner at my house and one at Harmony's family's house, we had an extra turkey that my parents bought. I think what happened is when they were shopping for our Thanksgiving, they saw that Sprouts had fresh turkeys, you know, not frozen. Sure. And they were really into the idea, but it turns out you can't order them until like the day after we had our Thanksgiving. No. So they went ahead and bought another one, you know, like, let's have another one. And they bought two. So they said, hey, do you want to cook one of these? So Harmony brined it and we spatchcocked it.
That's the best.
So on Thursday, we had another turkey dinner. It wasn't exactly Thanksgiving, but I mean, maybe it was. It depends on how you define things.
Were you thankful for the food that you ate?
Yes, very much so.
All right, that's terrific. Ben, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Please?
Sure.
Can you take your microphone and just push it slightly away from your gaping maw a little bit?
How about that?
How about that? Let's hear it. Let's hear some levels here.
Check, check, checkity, check, check.
Ralph?
Yeah, I hear him.
Okay, you guys are good.
He's talking about talking turkey.
Just boop boop boop. Talking turkey. With Dolores.
I made an herb butter and mine was satisfactory.
Nice.
Passable. Just the whole, there's too much brown at Thanksgiving.
Everything it is a very brown meal.
Very brown, very earth tony, which I guess
very starchy.
Very starchy. But there are a few Thanksgivings ago, we just did a pizza party where we had dough and a bunch of toppings and everything like that. And everybody made their own style of pizza. And that was significantly better because pizza is much more delicious than turkey.
I would think a lot of things fit that category.
Yes. Virtually everything except for circus peanuts are better than turkey.
This this week on Tacoma FD, the firehouse was having their turkey meal. And Dave Koechner came in as a mechanic to fix their truck. He took all of their scraps and turned it into a pizza, which he cooked on the engine's engine motor, the fire engine motor, and made pizza.
All right.
So
did he have the best Thanksgiving?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Because pizza is delicious. So next year, pizza party. It's no pressure. You know how long it takes to make a pizza? About 10 minutes.
Yeah.
As opposed to the 7 hours it takes to make a turkey. Fuck turkey.
Turkey is dumb. It's just on its face dumb.
Yes.
You can carve it before you put it in the oven.
Right. You can cook the different parts at different temperatures, which is what they require. Now, I'm not saying I don't like turkey derivatives. Like, I'll have a turkey burger or I'll have...
Sure.
They make dark roast turkey at Sprouts. It's in the heat box. And I will get that for breakfast many, many times. It's really, really tasty and salty and good.
Just a whole turkey thigh that you just dig in on. That's good.
I like the dark meat.
There you go, James.
You know what I was thinking about? We definitely have mentioned what time and day we record these.
Yes.
I'm surprised he hasn't just popped in.
Oh, yeah. He does know the meeting room.
Yeah.
Well, you just gave him an idea. I'd like to think he has better things to do than to listen to our horseshit. At least when he listens to it on its own, he's working wood or oiling some teak or whatever the fuck he does.
Man, James Jobs sounds sexy as hell.
It sure is. Teak is his manservant.
shirtless with overalls hanging over his shoulder. Sweat beating down his chin.
How much time have you thought about teak, dude?
Eating the ribs.
Of course.
Dark light glaring.
You have a crazy lens flare going on. I don't know if you could snap that and post it to the Instagram.
There. I can do that. My cat...
It's coming from two angles. It's coming from both corners.
It's
country and western.
My cat has opened one of the blinds to get the heat. So it's coming in straight at the lens and bouncing off of something else.
So that's why you get the two. Okay, that's very clever. Well, good for you, cat.
That's best burr. She's...
We should
do this.
Right. No, it's. I don't mind it.
Yeah,
it's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
What about you, Ralph? Did you have a Thanksgiving?
Yeah, so I went to my sister's on Sunday, and then Thursday we made sides. Usually we make sides on Fridays because we come home without leftovers, and so we do. I did the mashed potatoes. That's my kind of speciality. And then Stevie made green bean casserole and then stuffing. Now the stuffing, it's lighting on me is nuts. there, another screenshot. I got Ben's cough, I think, at the same time.
Perfect. My bad.
Perfect. Oh, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Maybe you did.
So it won't be on the Instagram. But we used, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, we followed a stuffing recipe from Matt from Dinosaur Dracula.
Uh-huh.
Oh. And so was it like Lucky Charms and fruit roll-ups and shit like that? Or
no.
It's like a family recipe. It is full of shit. It's he uses Wonder Bread as okay. the like flat out white bread Wonder Bread, but then it's got pine nuts, cranberries, okay. apples, and yes. sausage.
Oh.
That's far afield. That's so, different
for me. So that's like we consider that our main. So we don't have turkey.
It's good. No, that's
it's
good.
Good. It's really good. And then dinner rolls and cranberry out of the can.
You gotta have it that way. Yeah. This is not to go toe to toe with Matt's stuffing, but I do think that was the one successful thing that I made this year was stuffing, and I do. Cheat, quote unquote cheat. I use the cornbread stuffing mix from Trader Joe's, but no. Italian spicy sausage, kale, and chestnuts. And then it's topped with Parmesan Reggiano Asiago. And that is pretty good. And I have to get rid of it because I have given up carbs. I've given up carbs for Lent. So
you finally gave up carbs?
Lent doesn't start until McDonald's starts hawking the filet of fish.
That's right. Filet of fish Fridays. That's when you know it's Lent.
It's the Lenten season begins with Shamrock Shakes. It is kind of weird, this like unspoken fast food thing where you offer fish and tacos on Fridays, right. but we don't tell you why.
it's never explicitly admitted, but the fish is there. And everywhere. I want to say it peaked because I feel like now it's just a normal thing. They have fish all the time.
But like as like oh, but it's dollar fish but tacos on Friday yeah. for some reason. Some
yeah.
And then it's like, and as somebody who was raised Catholic, I would have no expectation that anybody would make any accommodations for Catholics. Like I don't see that as being a big enough. It is super weird.
They must consider it part of their market. They must know that hey, you're back.
The flavor's gone. Or it drives enough incremental, you know. Quarter over quarter or whatever, like, you know, we get an extra 3% by doing this. And,
right.
And,
someone was looking at the bounce sheet and being like, oh shit, we're fucking dying on Fridays in for 40 days out of the year.
Yeah, I don't even know.
It's sort of similar to how when there's gay days at Disneyland or there's pride days at Disneyland, they'll sell like rainbow cookies. They won't say happy pride or we support LGBTQI+, but
well, they're finally starting to do some acknowledgement, but for decades it was this one thing like, what are you talking about? We don't, what do you mean gay people congregating at Disneyland? Please. Right. We have all these special for this weekend only red t-shirts with right. rainbows on them and the Mickey Power Bottom t-shirt, which is a real thing. there was this, it was a super weird, you know how they do like couple shirts?
Sure, like his like and hers.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to say his and hers because sometimes it's his and his, and sometimes it's hers and hers, and sometimes it's they and they. But
yep, yes, that's true.
Couple shirts.
Sometimes it's Han Solo and Princess Leia.
Sometimes it's Han Solo, or sometimes you see two Han Solos. It's just I know because mm-hmm. they just know what's on each other's mind because
they know what's up.
But if it's you know I love you, I know or whatever. But there was one where it was I forget what Minnie's was. It was Power Couple. So the Mickey shirt said Power. And the mini shirt said couple, but the couple on mini shirt was just accompanied by her bow. And on the Mickey shirt, it was just accompanied by his shorts. So if you just saw the t-shirt by itself, it was like Power Bottom. Like, okay.
That's
for Mickey. Yeah. Like I could see that. Like yeah. he'll give Goofy a little control. Like that's fine.
Speed is the name of the game. So it's all about speed.
I don't know what that means. But
just a fair. Discussion of Power Bottoms on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Where they're like they're ignorant, but they're going through what they think they know of gay tropes. That's crazy. That's pretty deep into the reference there, and still to be like, I don't know why I'm selling this red t-shirt today.
But I mean, that was the thing. It was like. Just acknowledge it. Just do it. Like it's more disingenuous to like we'll take your money but not acknowledge your lifestyle. Like that was kind of awful. But
that's how I felt. That's how I felt on the 17th.
Yeah, and I think that I'm thinking.
You know, well, I mean, you're Orthodox, so you're
Orthodox Life Day. But then my thing is, like, so if we turn that on its face and we look around, do we want McDonald's to say, hey, Catholics, come and buy some fillet of fish?
No, because I mean, I think the thing is, yeah, it draws the people who are looking for not red meat for something, but it's like, it's not the Catholic fillet of fish or whatever, right? Like anybody, like, it's fine. But I mean, this is marketed strictly towards people who are celebrating Pride, like,
okay,
or as an advocate or an ally.
An ally, right.
Or what? Yeah, it's like, but that's all it is. But to say that that's not what it is. We have Rainbow Rice Krispie Treats for this weekend only. Why? Right. No reason.
Right. Just because we've got the
Senate. Sorry, give us your $7.
And the difference is also Catholics, not marginalized.
You know, no, I'm not going to. Yeah, I'm not going to even pretend that that's a thing.
Exactly.
Well, it sounds like Thanksgiving was great.
It was.
And we did some deep dive.
One part of it that was great for me was watching this the freaking Get Back, which I truly enjoyed.
We should do a podcast about that right now.
More like get back to the editing room.
No,
it was, I gotta be honest, it was kind of awesome. Didn't need my solid attention. I feel like, I hope, Ryan, you're not offended that I didn't like.
No, I was. There were times when I was zoning out. Like,
okay,
but please go on.
It's such a fly on the wall situation
100%.
That I feel like not even the cameraman were like that focused on every little detail. Like, right. I feel like there was everyone in the room was wandering,
right,
at some point or the other.
I don't always get the sense that the camera's being manned.
I mean, it is, I mean, to a sense, it is. But I mean, yeah, it's. But and that might go to the director and what his true focus was on either providing them direction or trying to fucking push Tunisia or whatever on them at every fucking second for his torchlit stage. Like, dude, nobody wants to fucking do this. Back off. Maybe give these guys some direction.
He was so interested in that venue. He must have had some sort of kickback or something.
No, I think he's a hack. And it's like he has one vision.
Yeah.
that was it.
Like, large overview, just like Ralph was saying, I felt the same way. It was deeply immersive. It was like, this is just what is happening in this room. I did not feel the presence of the filmmakers in any way. It was literally, like you said, fly on the wall. It was almost just if you had security cameras that were just perfect.
Oh, if there's a Night Trap version of this, Ryan?
What's that?
Video game for the Sega CD where you can. It was security cameras, and you can pick which ones you want to look at to uncover the mystery. And sometimes things would be nothing, and sometimes there would be some stuff in it.
So no, that's not okay. The same game with Dana Plato, is it?
Or it is. It is
the one with Dana Plato. Yeah.
it's so okay. I'm gonna ask Ryan this question.
Yes,
because you've brought it up before, and I didn't want to engage with the conversation until we actually got to Get Back.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned to me, maybe even on the show, a previous version of this footage that was a film called Let It Be.
This is correct. In fact, it's right here, a visual reference for our podcast. I have it on video disc. I will put that right there. I don't have a video disc player.
It's totally going to fall like George's guitar.
Yeah, that was funny. Yes, it is previously a movie called Let It Be. This is correct.
Right.
And so what we're watching is the raw footage.
I wouldn't even say that. I would say that because the raw footage, they kind of give some background up front where there's 65 hours of film footage.
Right.
That's the raw footage. Like, that's what we're seeing. Oh, this is assembled.
I didn't mean to say that. You're right. Like, what we're watching is they shot all this shit, and then back then they made this movie, which is, you know, it was, like 2 hours. But now they took all the shit again and used it to make all of Get Back.
But the thing about Let It Be is Let It Be is not the Reader's Digest version of Get Back. Let It Be was, first it was made not thinking that it would be the Beatles' last hurrah. Like, it was not the epitaph or anything like that. It was supposed to be, look at the Beatles being successful again.
Really?
And obviously they weren't. Like, we're seeing it right now. Like, this isn't the Beatles being successful. So ultimately what happens is it's a movie with really no narrative. So there's, not to give anything away, but I think you're seeing what's happening right now is there's like three segments. The first segment is pretty much aligned with episode one, which is them at Twickenham Studios.
Days 1 through 7.
They don't acknowledge George quitting. George doesn't quit the band. There's a truncated version of the row that he and Paul get in. But it's much more uncomfortable in Get Back. But like, where they're talking about whatever it pleases you, I'll do it. Like, that's the only time you really ever see any significant conflict in Let It Be. But even then, it's like, I'm familiar with that scene, and it's a very, in its original form, it's very uncomfortable. This, with all the silence, and then like, the scene ends with whatever pleases you, I'll do it. And then like, the scene ends. It doesn't go into all the like, George just fucking tearing down Paul for being a shitty person afterwards. Like, but there's, other than that, it's no narrative. It's like, they rehearse it in the studio, then they rehearse at Apple, which is their headquarters in Savile Row. And the last segment is them doing the concert on the roof. There is no narrative. It's formless. It's kind of a slog. It's also really ugly to look at too. That's the other thing that I think would be interesting to talk about, is like how great the footage is, because the original footage, it was supposed to be a television special, shot in 16 millimeter, not well lit, super grainy, whatever. Then they decide it's not going to be a television special. We need to recoup our money. It's going to be released in theater. So it's a 35 millimeter blow up of a 16 millimeter grainy print. And then all the video copies are from 1981-82, which is then a cropped version of the blown up version. So it's like, it's just ugly and dirty to look at. There's nothing going on. You can't hear anything really. So yes, that's the difference between Let It Be and Get Back. So Get Back has a narrative in, like, you don't see George Martin except for one brief scene in Let It Be. Like, he just doesn't exist. And I don't really think that you hear from Glenn Johns. You don't hear really from Michael Lindsay Hoag. I don't know if it's Hoag or Hoag. I've read his name for 25 years, and I go for Hoag.
I have a note about that, because I saw that the dude's name was Lindsay Hoag or Lindsay Hoag, and it made me think of This Is Spinal Tap, and I was like, wait, what's the name of that character? And it's Sir Dennis Eaton Hoag. Which is, he's either eating a dripping hog or he's eating, he's pork eating products. No, either way, Sir Dennis Hog.
I kept reading it as Glynis Johns.
Oh, is it Glynis Johns?
She's the mom in Mary Poppins.
And underrated holiday film, The Ref, which sadly features Kevin Spacey, but it's a good film anyway.
Ryan, I wrote this note after realizing what it was. my note was, who's Thrad?
Oh, traditional.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
I wrote a lot of good songs.
I saw it the first time. I saw it said, because they frequently put up the name of the song they're singing and who wrote it. And the first time I saw it just said Thrad. I'm like, ooh. I don't know, Thrad. He sounds cool. And then I saw it again. I'm like, wait a second. That's not a name. There's a period after it. And why could they just put like traditional?
Traditional. They, on some of them where it's the music credit, right? It spells out McCartney, Lennon, Harrison, Starr, or Starkey. I don't know what Starkey, okay. That's way more characters than it would take to spell traditional. Just finish the word.
And then in the end credits, it was like written by traditional. It's like, that's not how words work.
Right. which I will point out that, Ryan, I'm going to have to go to you for facts on this. In the established catalog, which is what I would think of as like albums they released.
Yes.
How many songs have all four as a writing credit?
Officially, on the original 13 albums, just one song, Flying, which is okay. Instrumental. There's a few additional songs on Anthology, I think one right. at least.
Free as a Bird, I think.
Free as a Bird, maybe, but like there's a jam that they did like around 65, 66 called 12 Bar Original, which is attributed to all four of them.
Okay.
But there's some other things on Anthology similar to this. It's like they're collaborating in the studio. It never kind of got to the point of being a full song with an established writing credit.
Right. So they just give it to all of them.
Yeah.
Well, there was like four or five in this episode. That's what I noticed that. We were talking about like the writing credits. It's like there is a lot that they did giving to all of them.
And another thing that was kind of interesting to me, I want to go and research the names. They did a Quarrymen song that was uh-huh. attributed to McCartney and two other guys. And it's like, well, good for those fuckers who have not seen a dime since right. you know they right. got kicked out of the band in 1958. The same thing kind of happened to Pete Best, too, when Pete Best finally appeared on an official Beatle recording with Anthology. It's like, he's finally getting some money out of it. Like, I'm sure it's making a significant difference in his life, but like, and it's certainly not like John Lennon money, but
it's still, about time.
He could get a Bentley now or whatever.
It cracked me up when Ringo was singing his song at the piano and Paul and George were just like laughing at him.
The famous story is that whenever Ringo would pitch a song, they would more or less laugh at him because they were like, Ringo, you're just rewriting somebody else's song and you don't realize. Like, he was like, oh, sorry, guys. And they mention Carolina in My Mind, which was a song that they were very familiar with because Paul plays bass on the original. George does backups. It's on Apple. So the fact that Ringo comes up with a song, it's like, I've got Carolina on my, or Going to Carolina. It's like, you mean like the song we just recorded with James Taylor? Okay.
Yeah, there was definitely a bit where Paul was saying, oh, this might be a good song for Ringo, you know, because it's kind of like that other one you did. Like kinda, throw him a bone.
But, and they kind of, there's, historically, they always say, they frame it up as they're always in good spirits when they work on Ringo stuff. Like, it's all very collaborative because everybody loves Ringo. Like, that's yeah. their thing. So when Ringo needs help, they would rally around him, which is why they all wrote songs for him in his solo career and everything. It isn't like, oh, poor Ringo. I mean, maybe to an extent, but like,
right.
they just like Ringo. They want to help Ringo. They give him a hard time, like, Ringo, rather than like, you piece of shit. This is another song that you're stealing from somebody. They're just like,
oh, Ringo.
And even Ringo talks about it where he's like, yeah, they just make fun of me. And I'm like, sorry, guys. It's like, that's a Carl Perkins song, you idiot.
Good old Ringo. He spoke the least, I think, in this episode at least.
Oh, by far, he is the quiet Beatle, for sure. He is
the quiet one. I read the numbers. None of these dudes was even 30 at this time.
I would say that, like, I think George is 25.
George is 25. Ringo and John are 28. And Paul is 26. So imagine you're 26 years old, and you've been in the Beatles for almost 10 years. Or however long.
Professionally, yeah. 1962 yeah. is when they got signed to EMI. And so, then 62, yeah. And then they were together since 58.
I watching this show, I have so much sympathy for them. You know, it must be very difficult to sit down and be like, time to make some more Beatles songs. I'm 26. Like, I don't think when I was 26, I didn't write a single Beatles song.
This is true. I knew that about you.
Yeah.
Just think about the logistics of it. Like, we're all friends. We've known each other for like 25 years. But if I had to be 2 inches away from your mouth on a microphone, uh-huh. like Paul and George were for 6 years, I don't care who you are. I don't care how much I love you. I don't want it.
Like, you'd want a break.
Can I have a little bit break, please?
Yeah. And in fact, I know you said that this wasn't meant to be the Beatles' last thing.
No.
But I just kept getting that impression. Maybe I'm reading in what I already know. But to me, it seemed like the boys at least were like, and that.
And this is kind of, and I'm glad that they did something up front. I don't know if this ever made it to air, but I was talking about like, maybe we should do a primer because Get Back, mm-hmm. Let It Be does not exist in a silo. It's a reaction to essentially their entire career. And that's kind of why Peter Jackson set everything up. It's like previously on The Beatles.
That's right.
because I know where the story goes. It's like, okay, I know why he's showing that. I know why he's showing that. They're not really making an explicit connection between what's going on in the film and the footage, but like, I get it. I've already lost my, whether this is the last hurrah, But I mean, when you think about it, they like took rock where, as far as they think they could go, they went psychedelic on Sgt. Pepper. Then they deconstructed it on the White Album. And it's like, what's next?
Yeah, what else can you... Now you can't...
And no, please.
There's only so far you can innovate. You know, there's right, got to be a point where like now all we're going to do is just rock.
And you have 2 weeks. And I think that's probably another big part of the story is that it's really about the Beatles' failure. Like, this is the first time where the Beatles couldn't deliver. And like, while it would be insane, like, hey, can you write an entire album in 2 weeks when we know modern day how it takes years to make an album, right? Like, the Beatles would do shit like that. They recorded their first album in 12 hours. They wrote Hard Day's Night overnight. They said, okay, here's the title of the movie. Come back with a song. We can record tomorrow. They wrote and recorded Hey Bulldog in front of a film crew that was there to shoot a video for Lady Madonna. And they were like, well, we're in the studio anyway. Let's just record another up-tempo song while we're here. They would just pull shit out of their ass all the time.
Right.
And this is the first time when they couldn't do it. But I think part of that is where you see a lot of the conflict is George is being very realistic about this. Like, I can't write this is the impression I got. I can't write a song like we normally write a song because all we have is the four of us. Like, I have to write this song so it sounds good without any overdubs or studio production or anything like that. It's just going to be the four of us, which is why he keeps on pitching like, well, this one's just me and my guitar. So I think this will fit the bill. He's being very practical. And Paul's just being Paul. And I think that's where they were kind of getting in at one of their mini fights of like, we could work out the arrangement later. And George be like, we kind of have to figure this shit out now. It's a little bit different. We have to write the song for the parameters that we're in. And that's why he keeps on pushing for like, maybe Eric Clapton can come in. He's another thing. So it takes the burden off of us to do that. Or he mentioned Billy Preston. Spoiler alert, Billy Preston does show up in probably the second episode. But like, I think that's where a lot of the conflict was, where it was like they were working so differently. And it's miserable too. Like,
then to have that, but then to have like Paul being like, hey, you shut up and be quiet, barely play so you can hear my voice.
Right.
It's like
that adds to conflict.
Yeah.
Because George is there, he's trying to be as accommodating as he can. He's trying to adapt into this scenario. And like you said, on top of that, to be told not to play as much, it's like, well, man, I'm fucking here. I'm part of the Beatles. Yeah. Let me be in the Beatles. Yeah.
But also, what's also crazy is they're spending all of this time in this space, writing and writing and performing and playing. And then George goes home, tries to unwind and watch a movie on TV, and ends up writing a song.
Which is like, oh, so many things are like that. So many things, like Good Morning, Good Morning. John was sitting at his piano and there was a Cornflakes commercial on where it starts off with Good Morning, Good Morning. It's like, okay, that's going to be. And an hour later, he has a song. Like, there's so many instances of that's what it is. It's just like this brief little moment of inspiration that they jump on. They didn't think that they were writing songs that would be listened to 50 years later. It was all ephemeral back then. Like, I'm just gonna toss this one off. No big deal.
Something would be on a record. But that's the thing. It's like there's so much we don't see, even though we see a ton.
Yes.
There's still so much more that we're not seeing. And it's just like, I don't even know if I wanted to be in that room for 2.5 hours watching this. Let alone, like, this took place over these 2 hours, 2.5 hours took place over a week.
Right. Yes.
And it's a miserable week too. they don't, like, some of the things that are kind of alluded to, but they don't really touch on is they were used to working at night. At that point, they were night people and they would book overnight sessions because that's when they were up and available. John is notoriously lazy, hard to get him out of bed. They would work late at night. Second, it's a big, cavernous, unheated building in London in winter. Like, they were saying it's freezing in there. There's no, like, it was just a miserable, empty which is why I think they added the colored lights the next day. It's like, can it be a little bit more cheery in here? It's just, it was like, added space, even if you're functioning properly, you're not teetering on the edge of breakup or divorce, as they call it. Like, it was just an unpleasant experience to be in for a week, regardless of like the pressure of writing an album and a film director who doesn't get jack shit, and that you pushed your producer aside and all that, all the other shit that's going on.
Well, I also, just,
I like that the guy who keeps, the guy keeps pushing the venue, and it's fucking another annoyance. And it just cracks me up watching them deal with that and say, oh, we could do a theater in the round, but then the equipment's in the way. And he says, make it out of plastic. And it's just like their way of saying, just fuck off. Who cares?
Right. They don't want to address that. They don't want to address that part just yet. And I was thinking, like what you were talking about, Ryan, it can't be conducive to the creative process to go and clock in.
Yes.
Like, this is very like a job. Like, here we are in the morning. I've got a coffee. Let's start making music. But the process is fascinating to watch, because clearly the way it works is John and Paul have little stuff that they've written out or figured out musically. Mm-hmm. And then Paul with his temp tracks of like, okay, so the music goes like this, and then I go blah, 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 something, something, day. And let's just have like one word in there. And then later on, when you hear the song and the lyrics maybe mean something to you, it's funny to think that the lyrics were originally day.
Yeah. The original lyrics for yesterday were scrambled eggs,
because yeah.
You know what, you want to scrambled eggs, how I love your sexy legs, or whatever it is.
And then they just take it like bit by bit, like even the long and windy road where he says he's waiting there, and the dude is just like, how about standing instead of waiting? And it's like, okay.
Right. Now
that's in the song. That's a lyric.
That's right. And so it's strange from the perspective of knowing the songs.
Yes.
Because you hear them writing it and you're like, no, you don't have it right yet.
No, you guys are frustrating me. You're so close.
That's not how it goes. It's a bit like, did you ever see Yesterday?
Oh, no, I didn't. I tried to steer clear of that.
It's
like the Beatles in this. They don't know Beatles songs yet. It's like,
that's what they are. Yeah, exactly. You know what? They actually, one thing that I was pleased with and I enjoyed is that John and Paul were like just joking around with each other from time to time. They have like all these little personal in jokes.
The fake fight, yes. Where they're having a discussion and both realize that they're mic'd, and so they just start going off on each other.
That's fun. That's two dudes having fun. Like, they made a reference to Hard Day's Night, because one of George's plus ones was a Hare Krishna. And yes. John says, who's that little old man?
Yes! It was so awesome. And I think that's one of the things where it was like previously on the Beatles.
It's right.
Like, and they included that scene, too.
They showed that specific scene in Hard Day's Night, yeah. But yeah, they're just making jokes. Yeah.
There are a lot of deep jokes in there, and to the point where it's like, is anybody going to get this except for like people like me? There's one point where they talk about, oh, maybe, you know, if Ringo bows out, maybe we could get Jimmy Nichols. And it's like, and they both laugh, like, ha, ha, ha. He's the guy who Ringo got tonsillitis, and they were booked to perform a tour in Australia. And there was a big fight. And of course, George, it kind of shows his character back then. It was like, we're not the Beatles without Ringo. Just cancel the shows. And then they were kind of badgered into like, look, we'll be disappointing all these poor Australian people. And, you know, they're sad because their toilets flushed the wrong way. And
they're already down.
They're already down. We just need the Beatles in their life. So this guy replaced Ringo for like 7 days in like 1964. And they're still, and you'll read about this. Like, it's still used as a punchline. Like, watch out, we're going to replace you with Jimmy Nichol. there's a ton of shit in there. It's like, and I think that's probably the genius of Peter Jackson, is that depending on what level of fandom you have, there's enough for you to kind of unpack. So if you have deep level of fandom, like, you're going to get a Jimmy Nichols or a Dick James joke. There's right. lots of Dick James jokes in there. And I was kind of shocked that he showed up on the set. So like you laugh, but if, for other people, it's just like, who the fuck is Dick James?
Like me, for example. But so we just exemplified that between the three of us. Like Ralph laughed at the fake fight. Yes. I laughed at the Hard Day's Night reference. I don't know if you've seen that movie, Ralph.
No.
So there you go. And you get the Jimmy Nichols joke. We're already showing the levels.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and it's deep. Like some of that shit is deep. There's great stuff too. Like there's stuff just like if you're like, I don't know. Are you ready? Was there more to talk about? Because I can go off on a tangent. Just
whatever
myself.
You want.
I have a thing on like, yeah. So I am not like super steeped in Beatles. Like I like the music. I like the band. Uh-huh. Listen to them my whole life through parents and stuff. Right. And while watching this, I'm like, fuck, this is really long. I don't know how people are going to spend the weekend watching all of this shit. This morning I woke up and in my iTunes, it says up next episode 2, Get Back. And I'm like, I could probably watch that right now.
Yeah.
It's weirdly like it's tedious to watch, but I want to see more of it. Uh-huh. And it's kind of because he's setting it up in such a way where they're really hyping up this venue, but I already know what the venue's going to end up being.
Right.
So totally. If in any other movie, this would feel manufactured, like let's set up this big thing and then the payoff
be payoffs. Yeah.
But so just like, I want to see them get to the point. I want to get to see the point where they get all the songs right.
Uh-huh.
And so I know I've got to sit through our next week's episode is going to be covering a 2 hour and 53 minute portion of this. It's almost 3 hours. Part two. Yes. We don't know how long part three is, but could be longer. I don't know. Right. But it's weirdly, like, I feel like by watching the first episode, I feel like I've put in the work.
Yes.
To deserve seeing the end product.
What happens
and
next?
So even though it's even though it's tedious.
Right.
I felt the same way where it was just like, this is a slog, like to some point. I mean, it was all very well crafted and intentional, but like this is kind of hard to keep my attention. But like the first thing I thought about this morning, it was like, I just experienced something. Like I was there and I want to go back to that. I even kind of felt like maybe I should rewatch that thing that I couldn't bear to get through, but it's a painful experience.
But right? That's the thing is, it's like, if this was any other group of people, any other subject matter, it wouldn't be the same. Like, we don't have, like, I don't seek it out, but I don't have that much access to these four guys other than the end product, which is the songs.
Right.
So, and I have never seen them swear. I've seen them joke around, but it's always at a press conference, so it feels very showmanlike.
Right.
So to see them just being guys and hanging
just
out.
Just joking with each other.
Like, I'm like, this is the perfect subject matter for this kind of however long this documentary is. So far I've watched 2.5 hours and next week I'm going to watch almost 3 hours.
Right.
So, like good group of people to follow in this format.
Totally.
The dynamic. Yes.
The
task they're undertaking, the history they have together. You know, like you said, we don't get a lot of this level of seeing these dudes.
And about 95% of the songs they're, you know, that are constantly being played are songs I know.
Right. Right. George plays All Things Must Pass at one point, pitching it clearly for the album. But that's a George Harrison song, right?
There's a few solo songs that are there because there's definitely some overlap. And George had already recorded a solo album at this point of actually, I think they all had, maybe not Ringo. George had done a score to a film and done an experimental album, electronic album. John had recorded one, maybe two albums with Yoko. That was just all, it's essentially like Revolution 9, except an album. Paul had scored a movie at that point and written music for other people. Apple had started at that point. They were writing songs for Apple artists to pick up, but and it kind of touches on something. So it's like, yeah, it's weird to hear, you know, the title song for George Harrison's solo album being performed by the Beatles. And then it's also fucking tragic that it's turned down and it's like one of George's greatest songs.
Right. That's from, what like, I was thinking great, of.
Like, but even like the other thing that kind of stuck with me is they would go through Give Me Some Truth, which is a John Lennon song. And I would say, like, even though Imagine is his signature song, I think Give Me Some Truth is really, like, that's what they named the most recent greatest hits album for John Lennon. Give Me Some, that's his thing. And then to hear it where Paul is essentially taking the lead vocal on it is super fucking weird. Like, that's a John Lennon solo song, and Paul is not just harmonizing, he is singing the shit out of that song right now. That's super weird.
By the time it would be John Lennon doing it as a solo, he would have hated the fact of hearing Paul sing it, right?
Probably. I mean, I don't know. I think that's the thing that we're learning about, like, when the 50th anniversary of the White Album came out, or this, that these things that are typically branded as like terrible Beatles situations, so the Beatles are breaking up or anything, there's still joy there. Like you're saying, yeah, like, oh, it's great to see them have joy. This is them at their worst.
And they're still having fun.
And they're still having fun. And the shitty thing is, like, wouldn't it have been great to see them in the studio when they were recording their first album in 12 hours and they were just overwhelmed and just
collaborating,
stupid kids, or
yeah,
Sergeant Pepper, which was again a very laborious process, but like they certainly were in better spirits, and Brian Epstein was still alive and they didn't have a lot of worries,
right?
Yeah,
so
yes,
this is for the album Let It Be.
This was what will become Let It Be,
and Let It Be was not produced by George Martin, correct?
No. So you'll see him. In fact, like I said, in the original, he's only present for one scene briefly in the background. You'll see him here. And I would like to go back and reread it, because reread the accounts on this, because in a broad sense, it's like he was pushed aside. He wasn't permitted to run things the way that he normally would for this album, a little bit on the White Album too, but like, especially on this one. But I'm wondering, I would be interested to know, why is it because it was film first, because it was considered to be a film project or a TV special project? Like, that's how he was kind of cut out of the process a little bit, because I feel like that would, just knowing him or what I've read about him, is that if he was in charge, things would not be going sideways the way they are. If they were in the studio and they were rolling through stuff, he keeps them on task. I mean, not in an authoritative sort of way. Like, he's always there to support. And, you know, if it's going to take 3 weeks to record Strawberry Fields, fine. But also, you hear him a lot on the on outtakes and everything, saying, the red light's on, boys. Like, the tape's rolling. Tape is money. You get to work. Like, all right. And then they would snap right there. There's nobody doing that here. And Paul is trying to do it.
It kind of sounds like they mentioned the whole Brian Epstein thing, how they, under him, they were able to like focus, like they needed somebody to keep them focused. And it sounds like Paul was taking it upon himself to be that person.
Right.
In addition to try to be a band member, but sort of kind of took it too far.
Yeah. It's a bit too much.
Well, I think that's the general story, like, for decades has been like Paul tried to take control. I think it's way more deep than that. And yeah, Brian Epstein being gone is a big thing, but Brian Epstein rarely was in the studio. That he was like, that's not my domain. That's
no, you know that meme where it's like a soldier like diving over a kid and like all the arrows and gunshots are hitting the soldier. Like, that's Brian Epstein. You know, he's keeping all of the money and producing and all that away from the guys so they could just be the band.
And kind of logistics and ideas and things like that. Like, famously, Magical Mystery Tour is the first thing that they did without him, the film. And it was kind of chaotic, but it was small scale, and it was the same year as Sgt. Pepper and all these other things. It was that. The thing that I thought was interesting, Brian Epstein was 32 when he died in 1967, 2 years, about little less than 2 years prior to this. How they refer to him, apparently unironically, every single time as Mr. Epstein.
Yeah.
Brian Epstein. That's right. Sorry, Brian Epstein. Mr. Epstein. Mr. Epstein. That's, sorry. Long story why I got that confused.
No, but, in, but you're right.
In their first trip to America, everybody calls him Epstein. Oh. But it's Epstein.
Got it.
That's funny. Sorry, I was just going to say something, but I forgot it. So I did want to mention that there was a part where they get into the venue. Mm-hmm. And it's like the first day. And George says, or was it George? Yeah, George was saying, he's like, yeah, I don't know if the acoustics are okay in here. And then Paul just dove in on that and obsessed over it and kept talking to people like, hey, what do you think about the acoustics? Are the acoustics okay in here? What could you do? It's you can see how intense it is for him and how much he takes responsibility.
But also he's one to kind of abdicate a little bit, like when people are like, oh, it'll be fine, or we can do that, or maybe we can do this, like, oh, like he'll just like, okay, you got it. I kind of feel like that's another thing about this, is that I think this is the chaos that was always around them, right? Like people trying to get their shit together and, you know, to some level walking on eggshells and trying to be right and everything, and that the songwriting process and the Beatle production process was always the constant. And when that thing wasn't there for that time, then it's just like, oh, there's a lot of hangers on and people not really looking out in their best interest, and nobody is helping them get through this. Like, and again, George Martin's usually took that responsibility in the studio and he got pushed aside. And I thought it was fucking great where George has left the band. They're all kind of congregating like over in the corner, and fucking Michael Lindsay Hoag throws out, I think we really ought to have a good location. Like, George has left the band. 25% of the Beatles are gone.
There's no concert.
And, then, and George Martin, like, being very much a realist, is like, location really isn't your biggest problem at the moment. Like, you fucking idiot. Like,
this child.
But I think that's the thing, is like they defaulted to this guy and Dennis O'Dell, who's the Apple. It became a movie thing more than a recording thing, and there's a lot of contributing factors, but I think without George Martin's guidance to like get them through the process, they didn't even have fucking recording equipment. George had to bring in his recording equipment.
He had to bring in his mixer, yeah.
Not EMI, not anybody else. It's like nobody had their shit together. I think that's the thing, is George has kind of seen through all this as,
right,
this isn't going to work, and you want us to fly us out of the country and do like, so you can have your torchlit scene and all that. Like, there's other things. We don't have enough people. We don't have the time. I just wonder what would happen if Ringo didn't have to film that stupid movie. Like, give him a couple more weeks.
I was going to ask, have you seen The Magic Christian?
I have seen enough to not want to watch any more of The Magic Christian.
Fair enough.
But it does feature a Paul McCartney written song performed by Badfinger, Come and Get It, as its title track. And that's a good song.
Well, all right. I think I know that song, right?
Yes, you do. Everybody knows that song.
Okay, just, you better hurry because it's going fast.
That's the one.
See, we had that moment where George was playing All Things Must Pass, and they got rejected. And it's like you said, like, what if they rejected Imagine? Or what if Paul played Band on the Run and they were like, no, it's not good enough for the Beatles?
He did. There's one version of the Get Back album where he does Junk, which shows up on his first solo album, and that doesn't get,
that does not go over
that well. It's not included. I think it's included on one version of Get Back. It's definitely on Anthology.
I guess it sort of makes sense to have George Martin not be part of this album, because this is the album that's meant to be a live performance. So what's he gonna do, layer in orchestra? Or
yeah, I think that's the thing. I don't think that they brought him in, but like, regardless of whether they're performing live or not, like, it still has to go down to a console. It still has to go. And production is also, back in the 60s, is different now than we think about a record producer. I'm sorry, back then than we think about a record producer now. It was more logistic. It was more about booking space and arranging things. George Martin kind of changed all that by you know, being a counselor to them and kind of like digging through and understanding how to support them and helping with arrangements and everything like that, which is funny when George leaves the band and Mal Evans comes over and says, well, George will work out your residuals, like, well, your, whatever your performance fees are, because he's kind of the, it's that weird transition between being a producer in the sense of like managing something versus the creative side of things. But like, regardless, it's like, he should have been involved in more of a, in a different capacity or some capacity along the way. And he just really isn't.
It sort of seems like they would benefit from having like a leader. It's there's four votes and that's not a good split. When George leaves the band, he's very, it didn't seem to me as like loud and angry as you would have thought. He's just like, all right.
It was hamster style.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to be a Beatle anymore.
He just stands up. It's like, but just watching John and Paul, and it's like, okay, that's kind of cool. They're working through things. And it's like, I'm on the outside yet again. It's fucking cold here. I'm going to hang out at Eric Clapton's house. I will see you guys later.
I don't even want to be around anymore.
He doesn't. And he just walks away. It's like, I'll see you around the clubs.
Yeah. It was, I don't want to say maybe anticlimactic, you know? But I liked the teaser for next week's episode, or the next episode, where it's they go to have a meeting at Ringo's house. It does not go well.
That felt Peter Jackson-y to me.
Did it? Yeah.
Well, things, look forward to it. I think I might even watch it today. Historically, things get better once they get to Apple. I don't know if in the Peter Jackson version it's going to turn out that way, but it's just the fact that they're in a warm room with couches and low ceilings. Like, it's just and good lighting. Like, it's just, it feels better once they get to Apple.
Since this is Peter Jackson, are we going to get extended versions for Christmas?
I can't handle anything.
Cause I didn't ask for that.
Well, I think this is the exception, because originally it was supposed to be a movie. Yeah. It was supposed to be a two-hour movie, and now we have close to 6 hours.
He sort of kill-billed it.
We have like 6 hours before we get to the third part.
Yes.
I want to say...
oh, my God.
We had Yoko and Linda.
Yes, right? That was great.
As the plus ones, and Yoko just seems like a kid that someone had to bring to work. Because the babysitter fell through, she's just, you know, she's doing her coloring. She's just.
Well, for a while there, Yoko was the only woman in the whole episode until late, and so I was like, "What is this?
Right?
Why the last woman?
Yoko, the last woman."
There was a part where Ringo, in one of his few lines, says about Paul, "I could watch this guy play piano for hours."
I wrote that down too.
Yeah. And I was like, please don't give the editor any ideas.
Bonus disc.
Watch Paul play piano for hours.
I thought it was one of the things I thought was great is that when you mentioned Yoko and Linda being together, is like, there's been decades of like all this animosity or whatever that we hear about. But it's like, when you see the real thing, it's like, they're both artists. They're both chatting it up. They're both like, they probably had a ton in common, like aside from dating Beatles, which is a pretty rarefied group. Right.
Right.
Like, but they're also art. They're both like-minded. They're hanging out. They seem to be like laughing. It doesn't seem to be like any sort of like they're laboring their conversation or anything, even though we can't really hear what they're talking about. Like, they're just chatting it up and having a good time. Like, I think that's great.
And the ladies seem to love Ringo. It made it seem like everybody just loved Ringo.
Everybody
loves Ringo. He's like the mascot.
He totally is. He totally is.
Is there any water in this movie, Ringo?
Everybody loves Ringo.
It took me too long to figure that out.
It's a weird reference.
It's a weird reference. It takes me sometimes.
That dude shows up. And there's a dude that shows up that's like, oh, there's the catalog of music that Apple just bought, right?
That's Dick James. Yes.
Okay. Dick James, can it wait? Can we talk about this catalog?
But I think that, that's the whole point, is that you have this, like, and, you know, they talk about their castle and everything and building walls around them. But even within the walls, it's like everybody wants a fucking piece of them.
Everyone wants a piece of their time.
How do you want to do this? How do you want to do this? Hey, we just bought this. This is cool. And Dick James, incidentally, is their music publisher who, I mean, long story short, like, did not give them a very good deal and took all their money from them. Which is why the Beatles don't have their publisher, and then he sold their catalog to somebody else. So the Beatles have never, I mean, with some exceptions, don't own their songs because of this guy. So he's kind of a villain, which is what, there's one joke where they're talking about, maybe in the middle of the episode, like, well, maybe we should be thinking about a divorce. And it's like, well, who will get the children? And I think John says, Dick James. Like, that fucker owns everything. He's gonna eat.
And that's the thing, is even though there's all these people around, even when it's just the four guys playing the music and just being the four guys.
Yes.
You know, George is uncomfortable with the fact that they're mic'd up and that there's cameras. Like, it's never, you don't get a sense. Like, I feel like if this was the exact same thing with no cameras, no other people, just the four Beatles at like Ringo's house.
Yes.
Like, it would be a much better situation.
Yeah, it would have gone a lot better. You're right, because as much as we were a fly on the wall, they were, like, in a fishbowl the whole time. They're being watched, and you have to censor yourself. That's maybe why he didn't blow up. Like, you know, you act differently when you know you're being watched.
I think that's just George. I think George is very pragmatic. It was just like, okay, well, this is no longer giving me any joy, so I'm going to leave. But if I see you guys around, I'll be sure to say hi.
Do you think that night George wrote a Time Bandits-like song about the situation?
I think he did write a song that night. I don't know what it is. Fuck the Beatles. I think it's a good one.
He also mentions Terry Gilliam. Hadn't met him yet, but...
Still watch Python. Python was on the air then. I think what you said is exactly, you hit the nail right on the head, because they've said that the studio was the one place where they were permitted to be themselves, because it was the four of them, George Martin, maybe an engineer or two, or Mal Evans, who is always with them, who's been with them since the Cavern and all that. Like, so the fact that their one sacred place was essentially being violated. Yeah. George has said, I think he says in an anthology, I think he said at the time, is like, that was not cool. Like, that was our last respite of, you know, freedom in the world, was the studio where we could just hang out and be ourselves. And now we couldn't do that. I don't think he held anything back. I just think that that's George. He just didn't like it. He got up and left.
So if Ringo's the quiet one now, is George the angry one?
George is the gone one.
George is the realist. George is like, what? No, he's not even passive aggressive. I think he speaks very directly. Like, he's like, I don't want to do this. This isn't going to work. How are we going to, like, I think everything he's doing, but he's always frames it up as like trying to make it work, though. Like,
yeah,
we need to do this. If we want to be successful, we have to do it this way. We need to work this stuff out now because of these unique circumstances.
That's the thing, though. Okay, I have a bit of a bone to pick with the circumstances. Like, was it in Brian Epstein's will that they have to make an album in 14 days? Or they have to spend a night in a haunted house? Like, what? Why are these parameters so set in stone?
Well, because I think that there's no easy answer to that. The first thing is that they always did it. They always came through. Whatever the challenge was, they do it. We have to film something. You have to record an album in a day. You have to have this out. We need a new title track. We need this. You only have 3 days in London. You have to record an album for Christmas. They just always rose to the occasion. So this is just, it doesn't seem any less insurmountable than anything else they've done, right? I don't know if that sentence made sense, but you got it.
I get it. So there's an element of them that whether or not the parameters are set in stone, they're not going to question the parameters. They're gonna do the task.
Because they always do it. And then I think the second thing is they're trying to figure out what the next thing to do is. It's like, okay, we built up rock based on our influences. We brought in folk. We did psychedelic. We broke everything down. There was a Bob Dylan album. Maybe the band, I'm trying to figure out who the other group is, that essentially had done a very stripped down, you know, album under similar circumstances, right? Like perform live. And I think what they were trying to do is and the reason why it ultimately adopted the Get Back title is everything's such a slog. Everything is so hard now, and production is so hard. Remember when we used to play for 8 hours at the Cavern and how much fun that was?
Get back.
Let's just get back to the four of us knocking something out like we did our first album, just like knock it out in a day.
Like and four instruments.
Like, yeah, and it's like, well, you kind of can't do that anymore, especially right. if nobody wants to be there. Like, so, and then I think there's the very, where you have the guy who's the head of Apple Films is like, well, you guys want to do this TV special, you're going to write the song. We have 3 weeks in the studio that I've already rented. Like, we're just going to do it. When you look at their time schedule and when they recorded everything, while it's certainly aggressive considering the circumstances, it's kind of how they operate. They did 13 albums in 8 years, plus world tours, plus movies, plus television appearances. Like, the amount of work that they did in their 8 years together is staggering.
Right.
Like, so this would have just been something else.
Another thing. And a sort of, I don't want to say gimmick because that's got a negative connotation, but it is sort of a gimmick. It's like
our concept,
this is the album we did in 3 weeks.
But I think that they were also it was sincere, where it was like they did the Hey Jude thing, where it's like, that was fun, let's do that thing again. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll write songs. We can write 14 songs in a couple weeks, and it's only going to take a day to record it, right? Like,
so, and they also had like older songs that they would sort of check and bring back.
Right.
Yeah, I think that the way it's framed up in the documentary was out of desperation. Like, we wrote these songs when we were 15.
Well, that's what my notes was. They have these 100 songs that they wrote, you know, back at the beginning. Well, they would have been on Beatles albums by now if they were any good.
Kind of. Well, I think this was something that I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but when they were like, okay, let's do Across the Universe, they're learning the lyrics off of a record, if you've noticed. Because Across the Universe had already been released at that point. Like, that's their level of desperation. It's like, okay, we did this song for a charity album. Let's redo it. And like, I think they were just stuck.
Right. Yeah, you'd go for what you can get. I have a couple of Darmolar-style notes about this episode. One is, I liked when John shows up with his coat and says he's wearing the same coat for continuity.
Well, he did. There was a couple of days where he did the purple shirt and the black vest, and then
and the white
green shirt with the and then the green. It's like, I was like, is he really doing? Like, it was one of those things. Like, for the memo, like, wear the same thing, and he's the only one adhere to it. Or was he deep in the throes of heroin addiction, where it's just like, I'm going to wear the same.
I'm not going to change my clothes.
Yeah.
And the other one is when Yoko was singing. The subtitles straight up did her dirty and just said wailing. Wailing and continues wailing.
For your subtitles?
Yeah, that's what it said. It didn't say singing or vocalizing.
It's accurate.
It is accurate. And I was listening to it, and I was thinking, like, she has to think that's not working. Like, she has to not know that what she's doing is, like, good.
But that's her thing. That's still
her thing. It's avant-garde. It's not, it doesn't have to be good. It's... Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm about done with my notes, I think.
Every
time they say we'll get Eric Clapton, it seems like they mean it. Like, they could just go and get Eric Clapton. Is he just not that big a deal yet?
No, I think there are a couple things. First of all, he's already played on a Beatles album at this point.
Okay.
Even though that was not revealed until decades later, he plays on Wall Made Guitar Gently Weeps. He does the guitar. And one of the reasons why George said he wanted him in there is because when the Beatles, quote unquote, had company, they were better behaved. So he wanted somebody in there.
Ah.
But I also think he's looking for a practical sense. It's like, yeah, we need a fifth instrument. We need a fifth player to like round this out. And I think he's also looking for an ally too. Because John has Paul, George doesn't have anybody, and George Martin kind of brings that up towards the end, like it's him against them, like
right.
So he's probably looking for some backup, which is probably why he has the Hare Krishna Mafia hanging out. right. the corner, right?
Because Paul and John are a writing team, essentially, and yes. George is his own writing team.
And I mean, I'm not deep into Eric Clapton, but I don't know. He's probably in his third group by the time 1969 rolls around. Like he's in Cream and the Yardbirds, and yeah, I mean, he's like, I'm sure he's available. Like,
there's something kind of actually devastating about what you just said is that the song that George Harrison wrote about his guitar, he doesn't even play the guitar on.
No, but I think that goes to how practical he was. He doesn't play the lead solo on Taxman either.
He wants he wants it to be done right.
Or whatever. He's just whatever is needed on the thing. And and yeah, so I don't think it was because he was incapable. I think he was maybe looking for, I don't know, perspective. Like, it's so autobiographical or whatever that it's like maybe he wanted somebody with a little bit of distance from it. I don't know. Ultimately, maybe. It works. Right. And Eric Clapton says, like, all I did was try and sound like George. Like, I made my guitar, like, and he went to the engineers and was like, make it sound like George. Like, make it really wobbly and crazy. And they
That's
did.
That's funny. What well, else I'm interested. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Are you guys ready for the lightning round for notes? I don't know if anything is going to make sense. Ralph, are you done? This is our longest episode of anything ever, but it's also...
I drafted something for the chat. I need to go pee real bad. So if you want to vamp for like a couple, like 30 seconds.
Are we going to cut this out or is this going to stay in your
No, I'm not going to edit shit. Episode? I'm not going to edit.
Go. We'll
I'm not taking my mic with me. I will have my earpiece in, so I should be able to hear you guys. So
this is going to be a reverse Frank Drebin.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Start farting.
Hit me your notes, dude. What are your notes?
No, because I want Ralph here for that. By the way, also, I can pee pretty. I mean, I know Ralph's apartment layout and stuff like that. 30 seconds seems like. Is he going to do some damage to his urethra? Like trying to like force this to happen? That,
it's called the fast blast when you really need to get it done.
You put a little extra muscle behind that. I just don't want him to hurt himself. You know?
He's going to be like, arching his back like one of those cherub statues where the piss comes out like a fountain.
Oh, yeah.
Which I mean, people seem to want to put in their backyard for a water feature.
I get it. It always seems super weird to me.
Like, it does.
First, check out this baby penis. Like, right, all right,
that,
cool.
That too.
And now water is going to come out of it.
And it'll make that delightful sound that you can listen to in your backyard.
And it's super fucking classy.
I was, when they mentioned the Magic Christian, I was like, Ryan has to have at least seen part of this. I know for sure that, you know, with, like, you've probably seen his Caveman movie, right?
I've probably seen less of Caveman than I have of Magic Christian. I remember I saw they show it briefly. How I Won the War, like went down to my Blockbuster and it was like a total sun bleached copy that was like in the window that nobody had checked out. That was all right.
So what was the deal with trying to make Ringo a film star?
I think that was his thing. Well, I mean, that's kind of a sideline, right? Like when Hard Day's Night came out, it's like, Ringo is the next Charlie Chaplin, like in the Pathé, like
it's the quiet one.
He's real. He's the quiet one. But I think they kind of set him up as like the goofy, fun one. So like, yeah, I think that was his sideline. Was he was going to be a film star, and to some extent, that came true.
Everybody loves him.
Everybody loves Ringo.
Also, I think those cherubs peeing thing is that only from the Money Pit?
No, I've seen that's a real
thing.
Life.
That's a real thing. Yeah.
It's weird.
It's super weird. Super weird.
I'm not a fan.
No.
But that cherub's really getting into it sometimes. I've seen the back arched like first morning pee or something.
I don't get how a baby cherub has like fucking abs. Like
it's not supposed to have anatomy.
But they I mean to some extent Buff you boy. Have to evacuate, right?
Not like, according to dogma.
So the
water feature should be a cherub taking a drink of tequila from one cup and spitting it out into another cup. That's your water feature.
That's exactly it. So these are probably not going to make sense in context, but we're going to be done since we're an hour and 10 minutes into this.
They're setting up for another couple hours now.
Well, yeah. They are setting up.
They're all caveman notes.
Drawings. Cave drawings. They're setting up for Magic Alex already, which I think is great.
I don't know what that is, so I'm excited.
So stay tuned to that. He's the guy, like, they kind of hit at it. He's like, Magic Alex is, well, this is in episode one. This is stuff that you've already been exposed to. Like, Magic Alex is going to be building our studio and he's doing this. And then, like, George Martin's like, and he's not buying a console. He's making his own. That seems really weird to me, but nobody wants my opinion anymore. So we'll see how that all goes.
This is for the side of the room.
There are two songs like that are notorious for the other Beatles to hate, which are Obladi, Oblada, and Maxwell Silverhammer. Those are notorious for being songs that the other three Beatles did not like. So I thought it was funny that every time they wanted to blow off steam, John Lennon would start like singing cheeky lyrics or like a drunken version of Obladi, Oblada, like, I fucking hate this song. And then like he's in the middle of this fight with George. And I mean, I know that we have 50 years of perspective on this and like they're deep in it. Instead of noodling on the, you know, guitar, piano, he starts playing the song that everybody fucking hates, which is Maxwell Silverhammer. Like, just shut him up. Like,
it's by the way, the Maxwell Silverhammer part was like, that was the most fake seeming moment where it was like, get me a hammer and an anvil. They got it, and he starts hitting it to the song. That's almost unbelievable.
It's Mal. That's what Mal does. Mal gets shit.
Mal gets shit and wears a fringe jacket.
Yes. Rest in peace, Mal. Good guy. There was a weird... They do a version of Rock and Roll Music by Chuck Berry.
Uh-huh.
And the note that I put down was, it reminded me of I'm Going Home from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Huh.
Like, there was such sadness and resignation in it. Like, here's the song that we used to like blow through and we'd open our tour with. And it's like, there's still energy behind it, but it's just like, it's so kind of sad. Like, it's not pathetic sad, but there's just like a different heaviness to
like,
it.
Like playing it in a minor chord?
Practically. They didn't, but they might as well. More about Michael Lindsay Hoag, that fucker. Him, I said Hoag versus Dennis. Oh, that was the other thing, the fucking divide and conquer, where Dennis O'Dell is like, okay, we're gonna do this thing where it's gonna be like around the Beatles 1969. So he's like trying to like get people on board, and he shows it to Paul. He's like, oh yeah, I think John liked that. That's a good one. And then it like goes over to John's like, yeah, that's a lot like around the Beatles. And then it's like Michael Lindsay Hoag's on the other side going like, so it'll be torchlit, right? And then we get my helicopter shot, right? Like, you and your fucking helicopter shot. Shut the fuck up. But they're both supposed to be on the same side, like trying to work this out. And they both totally have different objectives at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we really need to get out of the country and go someplace else. And good for fucking Ringo for sticking to his guns. Like, I don't want to go. Don't make me go.
Don't make me go. They actually it seems like they're zeroing in on the idea that it will eventually be the rooftop, because Paul says, like, what if we go somewhere where we're not supposed to be?
Yes.
There was also, at some point, they showed a potential venue, and Paul called it Farty. He called it Farty and Grotty.
Dead Grotty. Dick James, fucking vampire Dick James, like, showing him how he bought all these worthless songs that nobody gives a shit about, that they have a half percentage in or whatever.
That's what George says. Hey, you want to see what we have a half percentage in?
Like, yeah, because I think George's stake in Northern Songs was significantly less than John and Paul's. So like, Paul's working out Long and Winding Road because they have like 10 days to do a thing.
Right.
And like, Dick James is just like chewing his ear off on like some shit. And
right.
Paul just straight up ignores the guy that owns all their music. Like, shut up. I'm trying to make you some more money.
Right.
Like, just leave me alone.
Not now, Guillermo.
And then the final thing that I thought was shocking is that Paul has never seen Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. I mean,
it was super weird.
Was he joking?
No, I just think it was different. Like, they weren't showing it on television then. It wasn't as big in the UK as it was here. Like, the rights were different. He missed it the one time they would show it each year. Like, I don't know.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah. But then for everyone else to have seen it, it's hard to say.
Well, I mean, he was also in the Beatles.
He was a little bit busy.
He was busy being in the Beatles. Well,
one last thing is when George was getting electrocuted by his mic.
Yes.
No one would believe him. And he's just like, hold it here, touch it. He needed someone to know.
And they all got excited when the guy finally got electrocuted.
Right. Yay.
In the original version, and it's kind of compounds because it leads almost into the fight between John and Paul, between Paul and George, is the director like make some backhanded thing like, well, you're so wooden, it shouldn't matter, or something. Oh, like to George Harrison, like, fuck you and your helicopter shot, get the fuck out of here.
This is not a movie. You don't get to direct my motivation and my performance.
But you notice that all those microphones were replaced by the next day. Like, they had two sets of the whole thing was just so shitty and so poorly planned.
Right.
We're gonna start picking up steam in the next episode. I know.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good.
Well, is this our longest episode ever?
No.
Hour and 20 minutes?
No, we can talk. We're pretty good at talking.
Yes, we are. What else do you guys want to talk about? Well, what else did you see? Let's talk about Hawkeye.
I watched the first episode.
Yeah, I did too.
I tried to get a Twilight Zone thing going at my house for Thanksgiving. We ended
was
up watching like two episodes.
Was it being shown?
No, I was just putting it on streaming.
Because for those of you who, I don't know how commonplace this is for other stations, but in Southern California through the 70s and 80s, and even the early 90s, they would do Twilight Zone marathons on Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, 4th of July, and I want to say New Year's.
I think it expanded, but it originally started with Thanksgiving. And what would happen is we'd go over to my grandparents' house and all the kids would gather around the TV and watch Twilight Zone. And that was our Thanksgiving. And the adults were doing cocaine or whatever.
I think it's still happening somewhere. A couple of Thanksgivings ago, it was like on Sci-Fi or something was doing it.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And Channel 5 brought it back for a year or two, I think within the past decade or so as well.
I've just been doing it on streaming because it's just, more convenient. Except for when the Paramount app goes way off sync on the audio. Have you guys had that happen?
No.
That actually happened on Disney Plus last night during my second episode of Hawkeye, and that was enough for me to turn it off.
Yeah, it's very frustrating.
Yes.
I tried doing that yesterday and watched Hawkeye. I'm glad your show's finally out, Ryan.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Hawkeye.
The show that I love so much.
So hotly anticipated.
Yes. That's the only reason why it's my show. All right. So thanks for calling in, guys. Thanks for doing your thing. Hasta la vista. We'll see you next. It's my show now.
That's right.
Suckers.
It was
good.
My very long game.
So very long. 2 hours, 37 minutes long.
Right.
We'll be back in 1 week to discuss episode 2. Ryan's probably already watched it.
Have not, but I will now.
Okay. Cool. I'll probably watch it Friday into Saturday. Sunday.
Make sure you have provisions and maybe have a bottle next to you on the table so you don't have to get up and go.
I know. I don't know. I drink this teeny tiny Perrier.
It's all those bubbles.
I guess so. They all point down. Anyway. I don't have a sign off.
I don't either, and I didn't hit record at the beginning of this, so
I know.
I hope you got it off.
Well, I hope
I think I'm good. MIC.
See you in hell.
KEY.
Why are you eating so much hog?
Dripping hog. MOUS. See you later, trash cans. I don't have anything. There needs to be a better sign off. Do we have? I don't know if we had a sign off for Sweet Tooth.
No, I don't think so. No, we would just sort of peter out.
Speak for yourself, moron.
Yeah, that's
what it was. I think that's what it was. All right, well, we'll workshop something, and Ben's going to come back with some suggestions.
Oh,
at the top of next week's episode.
How about I'm not going to do a podcast anymore.
See you around the
clubs. Ben comes up with suggestions. Oh, God. Yeah, see you around the clubs.
Oh, that's their sign off.
See you around the clubs. Oh, good idea, Ben.
Oh, I like it.
All right.
That's a good one. So, all right, guys.
See you around the clubs.
See you around the clubs, guys.